Now, we've already been talking a little bit about looking forward to Christmas. And I hope you're looking forward to Christmas. It's an exciting time. And as we've seen today, we've reached Advent Sunday. So we're really into the final countdown now, coming up to Christmas. And as a church, as Alison's told us, we're going to look at Advent through the lens of four words. Today, hope, and in the next three Sundays, peace, joy, and love. Little words with big meanings. Now, one thing that has changed over recent years is the popularity of the Christmas movie. Or more specifically, or more accurately, perhaps the number of Christmas movies. Since the start of November, there have been at least two different TV channels devoted to showing Christmas films. Sky have added another one this week. This afternoon, Channel 5 will be showing four Christmas films back to back. So they really have proliferated over the last few years. And the reason I mention this is not to decry their value. You may well enjoy getting some snacks in, putting on your comfy pyjamas, and settling back to enjoy a Christmas rom-com. And why not? And the sort of film that I'm thinking of here has a good-looking girl, and they are always good-looking girls, coming back to her home to spend Christmas with her parents. Now, she has an incredibly successful career in the big city, but unfortunately not quite so successful with her now ex-boyfriend, and something her mother's giving her a bit of grief about. But then, hey presto, who should she keep bumping into around town coming up to Christmas but her old childhood sweetheart, also incidentally ruggedly good-looking, who she left for that big city career a long time ago. And you know what's going to happen, don't you? Of course, they have a few misunderstandings and arguments along the way. They both say sorry, and they manage to rekindle a romance in the space of about 2 days. She realises the big career, wasn't really what she wanted. It snows, and they all live happily ever after. Now, I don't think I'm going to get a job as a film writer, but what I wanted to draw your attention to is that they do peddle these films at something of a world view of Christmas. But what I want to focus on is that quite often they're all about hope. Things might have gone badly in the past, but now things are going to be put right. It's about hope. And perhaps us as the audience watching that is buying into that hope. If only life could be like the movies. Well, we're now going to watch a short video from the Bible Project about biblical hope. Thank you, Judy.
So let's say you want to describe the feeling of anticipating a future that's better than the present. You might be giddy or excited or maybe unsure, but most of us know that experience. We call it hope. It's a state of anticipation, and it's crucial for healthy human existence. And it's a really important concept in the Bible. In fact, there are many words for hope in the ancient languages of the Bible, and they're all fascinating. In the Old Testament, there are two main Hebrew words translated as hope. The first is yachal, which means simply to wait for. Like in the story of Noah and the Ark, as the flood waters recede, Noah had to yachal for weeks. The other Hebrew word is kava, which also means to wait. It's related to the Hebrew word kav, which means cord. When you pull a kav tight, you produce a state of tension until there's release. That's kava, the feeling of tension and expectation while you wait for something to happen. The prophet Isaiah depicts God as a farmer who plants vines and kavahs for good grapes. Or the prophet Micah talks about farmers who both kavah and yachal for morning dew to give moisture to the land. So in biblical Hebrew, hope is about waiting or expectation. But waiting for what? In the period of Israel's prophets, as the nation was sinking into self-destruction, Isaiah said, "At this moment, the Lord's hiding his face from Israel, so I will kavah for him." The only hope Isaiah had in those dark days was the hope for God himself. You find this same notion of hope all over the book of Psalms, where these words appear over 40 times. In almost every case, what people are waiting for is God. Like in Psalm 130, the poet cries out from a pit of despair, I kavah for the Lord, let Israel yachal for the Lord, because he's loyal and will redeem Israel from its sins. Biblical hope is based on a person, which makes it different from optimism. Optimism is about choosing to see, in any situation, how circumstances could work out for the best. But biblical hope is not focused on circumstances. In fact, hopeful people in the Bible often recognize there's no evidence things will get better, but you choose hope anyway. Like the prophet Hosea, he lived in a dark time when Israel was being oppressed by foreign empires, and he chose hope when he said God could turn this valley of trouble into a door of hope, like the day when Israel came up from the land of Egypt. God had surprised his people with redemption back in the days of the Exodus, and he could do so again. So it's God's past faithfulness that motivates hope for the future. You look forward by looking backward, trusting in nothing other than God's character. It's like the poet of Psalm 39 who says, And now, O Lord, what else can I kavah for? You are my yachal. In the New Testament, the earliest followers of Jesus cultivated this similar habit of hope. They believed that Jesus' life, death, and resurrection was God's surprising response to our slavery to evil and death. The empty tomb opened up a new door of hope, and they used the Greek word elpis to describe this anticipation. The Apostle Peter said that Jesus' resurrection opened up a living hope, that people can be reborn, to become new and different kinds of humans. More than once, the Apostle Paul says, the good news about Jesus announces the elpis of glory. In both cases, this elpis is based on a person, the risen Jesus, who has overcome death. And this hope wasn't just for humans. The apostles believed that what happened to Jesus in the resurrection was a foretaste of what God had planned for the whole universe. In Paul's words, it's a hope that creation itself will be liberated from slavery to corruption into freedom when God's children are glorified. So Christian hope is bold, waiting for humanity and the whole universe to be rescued from evil and death. And some would say it's crazy, and maybe it is. But biblical hope isn't optimism based on the odds. It's a choice to wait for God to bring about a future that's as surprising as a crucified man rising from the dead. Christian hope looks back to the risen Jesus in order to look forward. And so we wait. That's what the biblical words for hope are all about.
Well, that's given us quite a lot to think about. Advent is about the coming of Jesus, as we said. Christians often use these 4 weeks to think about what it means for us that Jesus came to the world as a baby. As the video said, our hope is not based on a being positive people. It's based on what happened in the past, the birth, life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. And that affects our hope today because we're hoping for the future. Our reading today, which Sander kindly read for us, is one of the many prophecies about coming of Jesus. And we've already heard perhaps as the most famous prophecy that Isaiah made from 9:6, but it's worth rereading it. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be on his shoulder. And his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Made famous, of course, by being used as the Hallelujah chorus from Handel's Messiah. You almost want to put the span of that into it as you read it. And maybe like me, you're amazed at the number of Old Testament prophecies written hundreds of years before Jesus that tell details about the birth of Jesus. Isaiah was writing 700 years before Jesus' birth. And to me, that's very strong evidence that God really does exist and that the Christian story is true. And I hope it is for you too. But equally important, though, is what Isaiah's words meant to his original listeners. Today we're going to look very briefly at these verses from Isaiah 40, which has already been read to us. As Alison has referred us to, there's this little book of Advent devotions from Isaiah 40 to Isaiah 55 by Matt Searles, who incidentally came here a few years ago, you might remember. And it's well worth going through this book. And the title, as Alison's already said, is Comfort and Joy, which comes from the start of chapter 40, which where it says, "Comfort, comfort my people, says your God." But this is what the whole section of these 16 chapters has been called. But why did Isaiah's early listeners need comfort? Well, a quick history come geography lesson for you. Perhaps you remember King David and King Solomon. Well, they were the first kings of the Jewish nation. But after them, it split into two, with Israel to the north and Judah to the south, around Jerusalem. And now the modern day superpower was Assyria, which is marked on the map, as you can see. And that was initially based in modern day Iraq, but by Isaiah's time, had expanded firstly into Syria and then had conquered the northern Jewish kingdom of Israel and taken them into slavery. And as you can see, Assyria is much, much bigger than tiny Judah. Now, Judah was still independent, but only just, with Jerusalem being just 8 miles from the border of this mighty Assyrian empire. But everyone expected it was only a matter of time before Judah fell to that heathen empire and slavery seemed certain. For the people of Israel, it's no wonder that God tells Isaiah to comfort his people. Now, we're now going to have a short quiz about waiting. We're thinking about waiting for Christmas, but 4 questions with 4 possible answers. I will give you a moment to think about them, and then I want you to put your hand up for the one that you think's right. So let's have the first question. How long did King Charles III have to wait to be king? And what I'm looking for here is the length of time he was heir apparent. Was it A, 65 years, B, 70 years, C, 75, or D, 80? So have a little think. Okay. Right, who thinks the answer is A? Put your hand up. Who thinks the answer is B? Put your hand up. A few for that. The answer is C. Quite a few for that. Or the answer is D. 80 years. One at the back. Well, the answer, please, Judy. The answer is 70 years. He was born when his mother came to the throne for a couple of years. So he was 2, I think. Next question. Sorry, the answer was question B there, so for those who said that. Okay, next question. In 1969, Octavio Gillen and Adriana Martinez got married in Mexico City. How long had they been engaged? Was it A, 47 years, B, 57 years, C, 67 years, or D, 77 years? Have a little think. How long do you think they were engaged? I do remember Saul and Pilar Cruz coming here from Mexico City and telling us how they arranged weddings because people couldn't afford them. And I suspect that might have been the case for them, that they couldn't afford to get married but wanted to be married at the end, so to speak. So anyway, who thinks the answer is question A, 47 years? Yeah, a few for that. B, 57 years? C, 67 years? Or D, 77 years? Well, the answer is 67 years. So well done, Lizzie. I think I saw your hand up there for that one, so very good. Imagine waiting 67 years to get married. Question 3. In 2021, our beloved Royal Mail, finally delivered, because you can see the answers there, a letter in Crystal Palace, London, from Bath. How many years did it take them to do that? Was it A, 95 years, B, 105 years, C, 115 years, or D, 125 years? Who thinks it was A, 95 years? Yeah, good. B, 105 years. A few for that. C, 115 years. One or two. Or D, 125. Yeah. Well, it was in fact B, 105 years. So you better post your cards pretty quick for this year is all I can say. And the final question on waiting. Who is the oldest person to receive their first Best Actor or Actress Oscar? Was it A, Henry Fonda? B, Katharine Hepburn? C, Anthony Hopkins? Or D, Jessica Tandy? Right, you might have heard of some of those actors. Who thinks it was A, Henry Fonda? B, Katharine Hepburn? No. C, Anthony Hopkins? Or D, Jessica Tandy? A few at the back there. Well, those who put up for Jessica Tandy are right. Jessica Tandy was Daisy in Driving Miss Daisy with Morgan Freeman as her driver when she was 80 years old, her first Oscar. So that's given us a flavour of people who have waited a long time for things. And good things are worth waiting for, aren't they? We're thinking of waiting for Christmas. We've perhaps already thought about what we think, what we're looking forward to, things like presents, getting together with family, perhaps simply a holiday from work or school. And these are good things that we can look forward to. But as Christians, we're waiting for something more. And do you remember, perhaps you remember Jesus saying to his disciples in Matthew 7, "If you know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him?" Our Father in heaven does promise us good gifts. Sometimes we have to wait. Sometimes it doesn't look like that, as perhaps it didn't to Isaiah's original listeners. And perhaps if you're in a terrible situation in the world today, and we've prayed for some of those situations, it looks very, very bleak. But God does promise us good gifts. So it's not an absolute rule, but it's a general principle, I think it's fair to say, that God looks to bless his people in this life. But absolutely, he will bless his people in the life to come. So let's turn to look a little bit more closely at today's passage from Isaiah 40. If you've got your Bibles in front of you, you may want to have them open there because we're going to go through it verse by verse. So looking first then at the first verse that we looked at, verse 27. "Why do you complain, Jacob? Why do you say, Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, my cause is disregarded by my God?" What that means is that the people of Judah are saying, God is not looking at our plight. Or if he is, he's not paying attention. And before you're too critical of the people of Judah, doesn't that sound like people today to some extent? People today might say something like, I'm not sure if there is a God, but then say things like, but God certainly isn't looking at me. If God is looking, then he's totally ignoring me. Aren't we too small to be of interest to God? Can we really believe that God cares for us? The Bible is surprisingly up to date in understanding human behavior and thoughts. And the start of verse 22, moving on, is surely ironic, isn't it? Do you not know? Have you not heard? Isaiah is talking to the people of Judah. They are the Old Testament believers. They do know. They have heard. But couldn't the same be said of Christians today? We do know. We have heard, but sometimes we forget. So let's go on, and we're going to look in verse 28 at God's credentials. The first one being everlasting. The Lord is the everlasting God, we can read. He's the creator. He's the creator of the ends of the earth, we read in verse 26. In verse 28. Also, actually, we come in a little bit. In the previous verse of verse 26, there's more. You know, God created the stars and named them. He's tireless. He will not grow tired or weary. He's wise beyond measure. His understanding no one can fathom. Then from the next verse, verse 29, he's a giving God. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. There are certainly some claims, aren't they, packed into just over a verse. But that's exactly what the Bible says. Now, thinking back to the video that we had before, we were told that there were two words from Hebrew used for hope or wait. Can anyone remember what the first one was? Anyone remember? What was the first word for hope? Yakal, that's right. That simply meant wait. And the second word? Kava. That had the added meaning of having a cord, having tension, waiting for something. So obviously I thought of a Christmas cracker. You would, wouldn't you? Because in them you have the pull, which generates the bang. And we're going to have the tension of waiting for the bang to see who wins. Because what I need is four volunteers to help me pull some crackers. And what I want you to do is to see if you get the main part of the cracker, is to read the verse inside and claim the edible prize that's also inside. So could anyone volunteer? Well, come on, Harrison, Isaac. Come on, Andrew. Yeah, don't mind. Yeah. Someone here, is that? Yeah, yeah, come on. Yeah. Right, good. Are we ready? Have we got the tension, the kava? Right. Pull. Right. So I think Harrison wins. He claims the prize. Sorry, Andrew. Is there a verse inside? Yeah. Yeah. Can you read that verse for us?
Before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the whole world from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. Psalm 92.
Well done, thank you. Right, if you want to go down, come back down there so you avoid the candle. And I've got another one. I'm sorry, I should have said, it is a winner takes all here. So there's an edible prize for the winner, but not for the loser. Right, well done. So you've claimed that. Pull out the verse. Yeah, leave those there. We'll pick that up later. Can you read that out nice and loudly for everyone?
Gabriel said to Mary, and he, that is Jesus, will reign over Jacob's descendants forever. His kingdom will never end. Luke 1, verse 33.
Thank you very much. Right. So there we had two verses, one from the Old Testament and one from the New Testament, that show us that our God is everlasting. So we've seen that God does know and understands the concerns of man, and he has the most amazing credentials. Next, in verse 29, he shows that he has solutions. We receive from him strength and power. He gives strength and power for his people to live the Christian life. And sometimes he gives that for very specific purposes. And one great example of that, as you can see here, I put up as Gladys Aylward. She was famously a very little woman, hence the name of the title of the book, I think. She was from an uneducated, working-class North London background. But she went to be a missionary in China in the 1930s and famously led more than 100 orphans to safety over the mountains from the invading Japanese, despite being sick herself and with very little help. There went on to be a very famous film made about her. A very ordinary person given great strength and power. She very much fits verse 29. She seems so unimportant, but she was given power like the weak and the weary that we see in the Bible. And then on to verse 30, the climax, I suppose, of our passage. Oh, sorry, verse 30 beforehand talks about the strength that God gives is better than any human strength. So even the fittest young athlete grows tired and eventually stumbles and falls. And verse 31 is, as I say, the climax of the passage. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. Now, this is a metaphor, of course. It's not literally true. It's a picture. It's illustrative of the feeling of soaring on a wings like eagles. Perhaps Isaiah's original hearers were expecting a miracle. And God had actually already provided one miracle in that he destroyed an army of 185,000 Assyrians without the Israelites doing anything. But that wasn't going to happen again. But we can look forward 100 years or so to the book of Daniel. And I suspect many of you know the story of Daniel. He was serving as a slave to the Assyrians and then in fact the Babylonians. But God was remarkably faithful to him and his friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, in Daniel. So the very threat and the very most scary thing that was facing the people of Judah, God was going to be faithful to them even through that. Well, how can we apply soaring on wings like eagles to ourselves? Well, we can soar in our understanding of God, of God's glory, his love for us, and how we can walk close to him in our daily lives. Now, Matt Searles, in his little book for today, has these words. Those whose hope is in the Lord will renew their strength, quoting from the Bible. What a beautiful promise for weak and weary believers. Not a look within to our own resources, but hope in him. The Christian life is not a trudge to the finish line, though sometimes it can feel like that. The reality is that we are carried by the Lord as on eagle's wings, not because we are strong, but because of who God is. He is the everlasting God who carries us on eagle's wings. Our strength is not in ourselves, but who God is. Now, if you're interested in understanding a little bit more about what hope is really about this Christmas, please help yourself to one of these books, a little book by Rico Tice called The Ultimate Christmas Wish List. What if you could get what you're really looking for? Sorry, what you're really hoping for. And I'll leave them at the front here on the table. So remember that Christian hope comes from having believed in the Bible. What do we need to believe in? Well, we've seen some of those things today, haven't we? God's credentials, the fact that he's everlasting, he's the creator, he's tireless, he's wise, and he's giving, and his promise to renew our strength. And of course, from the New Testament, we remember the importance, and we're going to think more about this as we go through Advent, of Jesus' birth, life, and death. And this gives us confidence in the future. And it means that you can have hope this Christmas. Well, let's sing now our closing song, There Is a Hope Within My Heart.